This is implausible engineering.
Seriously? I really don't think so.
That's never this is work. Not logical.
No.
It's not true. No. It's impossible. No. That's you just cannot bollocks. Be serious.
Episode 4. Asteroids and time machines. Again.
Well, that's just bullshit. Space mining. Most of the contents of the periodic table is available in atomic or molecular form across the entire solar system. After all, the Earth, accreted out of the same circumsolar dust cloud that all the other planets accreted out of, not to mention the dwarf planets, asteroids, comets, and other bits. However, while that accretion was taking place, the solar wind had an impact on the distribution of things by pushing light volatiles outwards, notably hydrogen and water, leaving the inner solar system mostly composed of rocky stuff. And since there's a lot more light volatiles than anything else in the universe, the planets of the outer solar system are all giants, with giant gravities, giant storms, and giant magnetic fields, all of which makes extracting materials from those giant planets quite difficult. But that isn't necessarily a problem. If it's hydrogen you want, you're better off just capturing water. Unlike hydrogen, water freezes solid at relatively high temperatures, making it easy to transport through space in big rocky chunks without needing to use sealed containers. And when you're ready to hydrolyze that water to get the hydrogen, you also get oxygen as a byproduct, and if you don't hydrolyze that water, you get water, which, like oxygen, is very useful in keeping people alive. Keeping people alive will be an important part of the space mining story, since mining needs miners. But keeping those miners alive will still be a very expensive business, so they will need to be mining something that generates a profit. That is, something that sells for more than it costs. Getting to that point of creating a profit will be a slow, iterative process. Firstly, prospecting between far-flung asteroids to find an ore motherlode, and then sending a mining outfit out to extract it, would be enormously time-consuming, and for much of that time, your mining equipment would just be sitting idle. Secondly, it's unrealistic to think you can just transport ore to Earth in its raw form. Large-scale gold mining involves refining ore, where the amount of pure gold in a metric ton of ore is only about 1 gram. Other metal ores have better yields. For example, 25% of the mass of good quality bauxite ore will be pure aluminium, but even then it's not worth flying all that ore down to Earth, which has plenty of aluminium anyway. So you can't just mine in space, you have to refine as well. And refining needs infrastructure. Refining probably needs gravity as well, which enables you to separate heavy stuff from light stuff. Regular listeners will know that these points are the basis of Cheap Astronomy's CSTOM proposal. That is, crash on the moon. Rather than doing a meticulous scan of every asteroid out there, we just do a quick sweep to identify likely candidates, essentially big rocks with shiny bits. Then we'd attach rocket engines to those rocks and direct them to crash on the moon, with reusable rocket engines that detach just before impact. Then a lunar-based team would go out and sift through the rubble. In the early days, those teams might just be looking for nuggets of precious metals that could be shipped back to Earth in robotic landers. The moon's low gravity would make it easy to launch those craft, which would then just undergo a controlled fall back to Earth. By volume, what you send wouldn't be that much, so you wouldn't flood the market and drop the unit price. Indeed, the first few shipments of space gold, silver, or whatever would presumably sell way over their usual market value. Assuming this much is lucrative, things could then proceed to the next stage, which is to build ore refineries on the moon. Once you're able to extract specific materials from ore, you might switch from hunting for precious metals to rare earth elements and perhaps uranium, since it does look likely that Earth will start running low on these essential materials in the not-too-distant future. Establishing such refineries might also represent the transition point from mining materials to sell back on Earth towards mining materials that support a permanent off-world human presence. So then there'd be more focus on finding water and also building materials like aluminium, iron and titanium, as well as silicon for glass and for solar panels, and vitrified lunar regolith to make good old-fashioned bricks. So, this is a not altogether implausible path to both space mining and space colonies. It's just that bit at the start that's hard to envision. That is, the initial step into making a profit. There will be a considerable leap of faith and probably a mountain of legislation required before anyone can crash a large amount of on the moon. And there will be an element of luck involved in us finding something worthwhile in those first piles of debris. And when we talk about a leap of faith, what we really mean is venture capital. That is, an upfront investment with the expectation of profit down the track. This is probably how it all needs to start, but faith can only go so far without some kind of financial return. So, stay tuned.
Hello, Steve.
Oh, hi, Bridget.
Didn't you do a podcast on why it's a stupid idea to attach a rocket engine to an asteroid?
Well, yes. It is actually a stupid idea.
So why do you keep going on about it?
I'm just making the point that most of the other ideas for space mining are pretty stupid too.
So you don't think space mining will ever happen?
No, I think it will happen after someone's willing to do something stupid.
Like attaching a rocket engine to an asteroid?
Precisely.
So you actually think it's possible?
No, that would just be stupid.
Do you mean stupid? Or just implausible, Steve?
Hey, you're really getting the hang of this, Bridget.
I suppose the next part of this episode is going to be stupid too.
Yes, although there's no intriguing perhapses about it. It is just dumb.
You mean it's even more implausible than just being implausible?
Yeah, it's really implausible.
This is quite a podcast.
Huh, do you really mean that, Bridget?
Steve, now you're just being stupid.
Time machines. In a previous episode of Implausible Engineering, we discussed how you could shift yourself into the future by sitting within a very, very fast-moving vehicle so that relativistic time dilation came into effect. It's just about you slowing your personal time relative to everyone else's, so that after spending a few hours in your relativistic vehicle, you disembark and find that thousands of years have passed outside. And you can do similar things with gravity. For example, dipping into a black hole's intense gravitational field would slow your personal time down relative to people outside, but in none of these situations do you ever jump from one time to another time. Both you and the people you compare yourself with keep on moving through time, just like you always did. It's just when you meet up again to compare notes that you discover that you have aged slower than they did over the period that you and them were in different inertial frames of reference. Another aspect of relativistic physics which raises possibilities for time travel is space-time curvature. So if you imagine yourself moving on a space-time manifold, which is kind of like a surface, and let's say that surface is kind of like a sheet of paper, then you could curl that sheet of paper up around into a cylinder. So you'd then progress along that space-time manifold to a point that sits earlier in your own timeline. And so, voila, time travel. But this is one of those scenarios that can be made to look feasible with computer graphics, but all you're really doing is playing with a two-dimensional representation of four-dimensional space-time. In reality, a space-time manifold isn't really a surface, and it's unlikely you could curve it back on itself anyway. You can curve a space-time manifold into a gravity well, but only up to the point where it reaches an apparent singularity. It makes no sense to think you can somehow curve the manifold further once it's already converged down to a single point. And of course, you can generate lots of extraordinary scenarios with Einstein field equation mathematics. But the physical translation of that mathematics requires appealing to phenomena like negative masses and negative energies, whatever the heck they are. And whatever twisting tunnels you might calculate from imaginary wormholes require the existence of white holes, whatever the heck they are. So all this starts looking a bit like smoke and mirrors, or at least highly theoretical speculations that can't be confirmed by anything that looks remotely like evidence. And there's even more cause for doubts. Putting aside the problems of trying to build a time machine, you also have to consider whether there is anywhere that such a machine could take you. There are reasonable grounds to argue that all the energy available in the universe, in one instant, gets used up in taking that universe through to the next instant. On this basis, how can the past exist as a separate place you can travel to if you live in the only instant that contains the energy required to sustain a universe? And similarly, how can you shift into a future that the energy of the present hasn't been transferred to yet? That said, of course you can travel to the future in the same way that everyone else does, slowly and steadily, instant by freshly generated instant. In any case, putting all the practicalities to one side, jumping into the far future is a dangerous business, and travelling back into the past is just plain irresponsible. Going to the far future is dangerous, since you'll be exposed to all sorts of new pathogens that everyone else there may be immune to, plus you'll have no understanding of how to undertake the basic transactions of daily living, and so you will become entirely dependent on the kindness of strangers, which sometimes works out and sometimes it doesn't. Going back to the past is irresponsible, not only because you could kill your grandparents, but also because you could take back pathogens that no one has immunity to, meaning you not only kill your grandparents, but a whole bunch of other people's grandparents. And if that isn't enough to put you off, there won't be any internet. Perhaps the most common reason that people obsess about travelling back in time is to fix up something they bollocksed up in their earlier life. But that's fraught with risk, since you may just set up a new course of events that will lead you to bollocksing up something else, a common theme of at least 50% of time travel movies. Surely it's better just to use the time you have to learn from past events and so just avoid bollocksing anything up in the first place. Heck, why not get rich and put a whole team of researchers on this? Not only will you be travelling through time, like everyone else does, but you will be manipulating the very fabric of time, creating a whole new future by drawing on the experiences of the past. Indeed, lots of people do this every day.
That was Implausible Engineering, a Cheap Astronomy production.